Hello and welcome again to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. This is episode number 495 as we count down to number 500. I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asak of Asak Real Estate, Danielle Rocco with Echo 6 Creations, and my supporters, Kason Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp. Be Your Strongest Combination. Keith Hayes of Sense to One Productions, thank you for your production work. As we do Oscar Mike Radio, we are mission in flight. I like talking to new people with new ideas and new things I haven't met before, and my next guest embodies all that. She is not military per se, but is heavily involved with our military if you do any research on her. I want to welcome Anne Marie Dougherty to Oscar Mike Radio with the Bob Woodruff Foundation. Anne Marie, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Travis. I'm so happy to be here and congratulations to almost 500 episodes. That's quite a feat. I'm amazed.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's conversations with people like yourself who advocate and serve our veterans that make it all possible. And there's a ton of good stuff. I mean, we could just spend, you know, a whole hour talking about your Drexel experience. And the reason I say that is I know some Drexel alums and work with some Drexel students, so I know what an amazing university that is. But we're going to talk about a whole wide range of topics. But before we do that, you know, riddle me this. How does someone in your background become the CEO of a very well-respected and powerful nonprofit like the Bob Woodruff Foundation?
Well, I've had the privilege of leading the Bob Woodruff Foundation since 2011, but the journey really started a couple years before that. You mentioned Drexel University. That is where I met my husband, and he joined the Marine Corps right after graduating. He was called to service after 9/11, and he comes from a long line of military service, his dad, his grandfathers, and the same for my family. My grandfather served, my father served, my uncle served. So definitely have the roots of a military family and then married into a multi-generational military family. And at the time that the Bob Woodruff Foundation was getting started, it was, you know, shortly after Bob was catastrophically wounded, which we can definitely talk about his story. I got introduced to the people who were just trying to do something to help combat wounded vets who were coming into the hospitals, Walter Reed and Bethesda at the time. And I was able to get involved as, at the time, a volunteer. And I think back on that, the mindset that I had, and my husband was training to deploy to Afghanistan. And I, like I said, came from a military family where, you know, service of some sort is expected and respected. And so I thought about, you know, what will I do to contribute? I'm not going to be on the front lines. And I think in the early days, I thought about my involvement with the Bob Woodruff Foundation, which was a fledgling kitchen table operation at the time, as like planting my victory garden, like people did back in World War II. It's like, if you're not on the front lines, what are you going to do back at home? And that's really how it started. And then here we are 18 years later, and it's been quite a ride.
So you've lived the military wife experience and the ups and downs and challenges of that part of your life that very few women, and men too, but very few women primarily ever experience. I mean, that had to have affected how you approached your service.
It certainly did. And the experiences of those who serve and their spouses and their kids is, you know, it's a really unique lived experience that, to your point, many people in our country don't have. It certainly shaped the way that I think about our work to support veterans and military families all across the country, especially after they transition after the military. But also, I do understand what it's like to be a military spouse with a husband deployed in an active war zone and not knowing when you're going to hear from them, or, you know, if they're going to come home the same, or if they're going to, you know, if they'll be impacted by their service. I lived that for 6 years, and it is the bedrock of how I think about the work that we do at the Bob Woodruff Foundation. And I It's also something that I carry with a lot of respect and try to pay forward that I had the opportunity to do this work while my husband was serving. And so I've really made it another part of my mission to make sure that I create career opportunities, whether it's inside the Bob Woodruff Foundation or through programs that support military spouses and accommodate the lifestyle, because it's not easy.
It's just very different because sometimes you hear the title CEO and it's like, well, they really were they ever really in the trenches for what they're doing for the organization? And you have lived this in a way that very few CEOs, in my view, in my experience, have. We're talking about the Bob Woodruff Foundation and your involvement in there. Tell us what it is, because I remember I remember Bob Woodruff and what happened to him, but a lot of people I found out don't really know, and I think we need an update.
Yes, I understand that. It's been actually 20 years
Yeah.
since Bob was wounded. So that's pretty remarkable that what happened in January of 2006, Bob Woodruff, at the time, he was had just been named Peter Jennings' successor. He had the big desk, the anchor seat, which is really the pinnacle of a career in journalism. And I say that as someone who studied journalism. And Bob Woodruff was the newsman of the day, and certainly someone that I admired and respected outside of ever knowing him. And unfortunately, while he was reporting on the war in Iraq back in 2006, the vehicle that he was in hit a roadside bomb. He was catastrophically wounded along with his cameraman, and almost didn't make it. And many will attest to this, it is through the bravery of the soldiers that he was out there with that risked their own lives to save his. And over the past 20 years, and this is giving me goosebumps, and I've told this story a million times, the stories of personal bravery and putting oneself in harm's way to help Bob make it out of Iraq and get to safety and recovery is extraordinary. We could spend a whole
Yeah.
podcast talking about the stories that have been unearthed of that bravery. But Bob had the opportunity to recover in a military hospital because of where he was wounded and the nature of his wounds, suffered a catastrophic traumatic brain injury. And while he was in the hospital in a coma for 36 days, his family had the opportunity to be alongside him. He was, mid-career, in his mid-40s, had four children, but his wife Lee was able to be at his bedside. They had family that could help take care of the kids, help, get them to school, do all of those things so that his family could be there with him while he was recuperating and when he needed them. But what they saw, because they had so much extra attention, and no journalist wants to go from telling the story to being the story, but that is what happened. There was so much attention around Bob getting wounded. They felt like a quiet sense of inequity that they were getting extra support and care above and beyond what the troops who were combat wounded, recovering on the same floor in the hospital were getting. So at that time, the family made a quiet promise that if Bob makes it through this, we're going to do whatever we can to pay it forward, to help the people who don't have the means to have a caregiver by their side, or our, young 19-year-old combat wounded don't have anyone that can come and take care of them. And that's really the spirit that started the Bob Woodruff Foundation. And it's the thread that I've been able to pull over the last 18 years to really just keep us grounded in what our purpose is, what the promise is, and how we can make a difference in the lives of those who have put themselves in harm's way and help have the backs of their families while
It
they serve.
just seemed like not only was he, understandably grateful to be alive to not to make it, inconsequential, but there was a real desire reading about him. And I remember when this happened, it's like, well, I didn't think the news people actually put themselves in harm's way anymore. It's not usually the SOP, but he did. And then there was this real desire to give back. So many times a lot of us in the military see news people as trying to make us look bad or not really respectful of what we're doing, the challenges we face. And he took his voice literally and built this foundation. And so you come in there now for 18 years, and it was still a new organization when you came in there. But how did you all start defining what the Bob Woodward Foundation is going to do and how it's going to do it?
Well, there was a sense of wanting to give back, but there was a sort of a realism that the Woodruff family hadn't served in the military. They weren't connected. They were truly civilians, and that wasn't their network or their family culture. And so they said, "What can we do to give back?" And they had a national platform and voice. They had an incredible network of people in media, entertainment, business, philanthropy. And that was what they tapped into. And in the very early days, what really got the Bob Woodruff Foundation off the ground is a comedy show and concert started by someone named Caroline Hirsch and Andrew Fox, who said, "We have an idea. We want to do a concert to benefit wounded troops." And they wanted to team up with the Woodruff family. They called it Stand Up for Heroes. And the most amazing thing happened. Bruce Springsteen performed. And that was what really put the organization on the map to be able to have real attention and the ability to raise money. So you have kind of like what's an inverted story of how organizations usually begin. You don't usually start with celebrity and the access and the ability to raise money and then define the mission. But that was really how it came together, and that was where I think I had a really incredible opportunity to take all of this potential and goodwill and incredible opportunity to focus it in on what do the families who are serving now need? What does the government provide? What are the gaps? What are the unmet needs? What's happening in real time? And how can we actually make a difference and do it quickly and effectively? And that's been the attitude of our work, and it's evolved over time because it has been almost 2 decades and the needs have changed. But that's something I'm really proud of, is our ability to evolve and be agile and to complement what the government provides, complement what other national nonprofits do, and stay focused on, at the end of the day, our goal is to help service members, veterans, and their families thrive.
Before we get into the programs and services you all do provide, I got to go back a little bit because, doing a nonprofit on any scale, sub 990 in or 990 plus is difficult on a good day, right? It's so easy to make one bad mistake or one minor mistake and have it completely throw things off. How did you plan, align, and stay true to the vision and purpose with all that going on? Because I'm listening to you, I'm like, wait a minute. Usually you got to be, pay your dues for a good 7 to 10 years before you get anywhere. If you get anywhere, you did do it backwards, but you did it right. How did that happen?
Well, thank you. And I would say two things. One, it was always very clear that my job was to run the organization and do the business of the nonprofit to the standards of an organization that has living namesakes who are journalists who are just trying to do the right thing. So the level of transparency and truth and mission focus that would come from the founders being journalists is probably, at the end of the day, the secret sauce, because there was such a desire to make sure that everything was done to the highest standards. And it's something really unique to lend your name while you're still alive to an organization and also be publicly recovering from what happened to raising their kids and having their family and all of those things. And so I always thought about it like we have to continue to earn the right to use their name to do good. And so that sense of like A journalist could do a story on your organization at any moment from day one, helps you make sure things
Yeah, but the journalist
are
is Mr.
squeaky
Woodruff
clean.
himself, right?
Right,
You
exactly. Yes.
don't like assumptions, but I guess you could come by any time and say, "Hey, Anne Marie, how are things going? I want
Oh, absolutely. That's his favorite thing to do. I always tell people when they meet Bob, I'm like, you think you're saying hello, but in a minute you're going to realize that you've just been interviewed. You're now telling him your deepest, darkest secrets and your desires and your love story and all of these things, because he just has, there's a beautiful innate quality that he has to just like get to what the story is. And I've learned from that and been inspired by that. But from a business standpoint and being the person that the buck stops with, it's actually a great way to run a business. The other thing is that our business, our ROI is the outcomes of the people we're serving. There has never once been a conversation in 18 years of board meetings and boardrooms and committees and this and that and governance and audits about making the widgets cost less and reducing the quality of the widget. So imagine if you had the opportunity to run and build a business that at the end of the day is just to do the right thing and to do it to the best that you possibly can. It's kind of like I'm getting fired up. I'm like, this is my job. It's pretty cool. But when it's like doing the right thing and then doing the
Because
right thing to
you don't
the
have any
highest standard.
shareholders to answer to. You don't have,
Right.
S you can do it the best way possible.
Yes.
Full is it's got to be invigorating.
Yes. But to your point about running, the business of nonprofit, there are business standards, there are watchdogs, there are charity rating organizations. And so what we did early on is just learn what the highest standards are and use that as our North Star as we were building the business, instead of building a business and then wondering if we were compliant or meeting the highest standards or knowing what the industry norms are.
It's almost like we do a template just on nonprofits, Anne Marie. This is fantastic. I go to the Bob Woodruff Foundation site and I see the offerings, I see the organization you have behind you, and I see some of the services you would provide, veterans and people transitioning. In more detail, what are those services? And then we'll get into like why you all chose those services to provide.
Well, the two main things that the Bob Woodruff Foundation does is we raise money and then do deep due diligence on what the needs and gaps are for veterans and communities across the country. And then we find organizations that provide those services in the geographic locations where they are most needed. So, in simpler terms, we give grants to other nonprofits that support veterans, service members, and their families. That's the main pillar of our business. The other piece that we've been working on over the last several years that is the future of the Bob Woodruff Foundation and hopefully is the future of the veteran nonprofit sector is that we've been trying to connect those organizations to one another and build a national network. So to that end, we have over 450 organizations that are part of what we call the Got Your Six Network. And our work is to provide value to those organizations working together and being a sum of the parts and making it easier for someone who's getting out of the military, this summer to connect to services wherever it is that they're going to set up shop with their families and get new jobs and all of that. So to make the transition easier to connect to resources that are high quality and evidence-based and vetted and verified. So that's the work of the future for the Bob Woodruff Foundation, in addition to the grant making. And to answer the question about how we know what to focus on, when you build, so the Got Your Six Network is now the largest network in the country. And so we have the largest sample set of organizations that can tell us what the veterans and service members who literally walk through their doors need. And then not just what they need, but what is that organization able to meet and not meet? So, what's the gap between what veterans and communities need and what their communities can provide to them. And understanding that very specific slice, but down to the zip code, because we have such reach now, is what we use to determine where we're going to spend our money. And it won't surprise you that the top three things, it's been this way for the last several years, is mental health support, not only for veterans, active duty troops, spouses, caregivers, and sadly, military kiddos. So mental health support for military children, and then housing affordability and housing instability. And there's a whole cascade of issues around that. And then looking at, and I'm sure this pains you as it pains me, but food security is still popping as a dire need. And I know you served in the Marine Corps, and as a military spouse and a military family member, it's just unacceptable to me and to us that there are people who have volunteered to serve our country that can't put food on the table. So
No,
until we
I knew Marines, Anne Marie, that in Yuma that were on food stamps to provide for their families, and they were just told, "Well, it's too bad. Maybe you need a budget better." I'm like, "Well, no, you can't feed a family of three or four on $2,000 a month. You just can't do it." I could
Especially
go
when you
on.
live in Yuma and your spouse can't get a job, and even if he or she did, that they wouldn't be making money that is more than what the childcare would cost for them to be able to work outside of the home. And also, as it relates to that, and this is where I do think my lived experience has helped influence how we go about our business, it's like if you're going to give active duty Marines bags of groceries, do it in a way that preserves their dignity. If you're going to open the trunk and put bags of groceries in there and you're going to see their rifles and their gear mixed in there, make another reason for that gathering. We're having a pizza party, we're having a community event for the kids to play, or something like that, where you bring people out and then you can preserve their dignity around what, to your point, it's just systemically impossible to use $2,000 to pay for a family of four to eat for a month. Oof, I'm getting all fired up.
I love it. I love it because, the reason I'm digging into this is I've dealt with a lot of nonprofits. I've been on a couple of nonprofit boards, and just to divert a little bit, if you don't mind, there's to me almost too many nonprofits in the United States for veterans. And I had a gentleman I know. He runs a company. He's very generous with veteran nonprofits. But he asked me, he's like, I've been giving very generously for the last 10 years for this 22 a day thing. And he tracks the VA numbers. He's like, the numbers haven't gone down that much. There's still veterans needing this or that. What's actually going on? Why aren't we seeing more progress in certain areas? And what I'm seeing is there's maybe some burnout or some angst about, people want to be generous, people want to help, but more and more it seems to me, Anne Marie, people want to understand what their money is doing. And how's it helping in a quantitative and qualitative way? Do you see that, or is there best practice to address that?
I absolutely see that. And I've tried to have the Bob Woodruff Foundation's business model be an answer to that. I want to help veterans and I don't know how. I want to help veterans and I tried and got overwhelmed. I want to help veterans and it didn't seem like it really made a difference. It seems like the issues are getting worse. And in some cases, these are persistent issues. What I would say changed the most is that in, post 9/11, we had an outpouring of patriotism from everyday Americans. And I think that's a beautiful thing. As a result of that, tens of thousands of nonprofits popped up. And when you really look at the numbers, I think two-thirds of the number that's quoted, like the 40,000 nonprofits, two-thirds of them have one person working there or a volunteer working there. Like they're small, and it's a race in your town. It's a in memory of someone who was killed in action. And again, I think all of those things are important patriotic expressions of gratitude and a way to connect with the military community. For the organizations that are working at a national level or who are working on major social issues like suicide protection and prevention, substance abuse, the mental health crisis in our country, and then the exacerbated crisis within the community that we're trying to support. I can understand that donor's frustration, and I can understand that it went from an expression of generosity to what are we doing here? I need to see some results. And that is a trend that I think is real in philanthropy in our country right now. And I think it's fair because there's so many competing interests. We have to keep showing up and declaring why veterans need us to have their backs when they come home, even when they're not going to ask for the help.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to ask you about. I mean, your organization is a bit different. You're not directly serving that veteran, but we do have, I mean, and you're married to a Marine, so you know we don't like shots, and we know we don't like asking for help. How should we as service members get over that? Because even me, I got a hard time saying, hey, I need help, or I'm not doing too, good right now. It's hard, but there's people out there that do want to help, right?
Absolutely. And I was listening to your episode where you were getting squeamish talking to the nurse associated with the BFW, and I could tell you were like sweating about the shots. I was like,
Yes,
she
ma'am.
didn't even say you need one. So I get I understand that. While I didn't
Wait,
personally,
now, Anne-Marie, does your husband like shots, Anne-Marie?
no, of course
Okay,
not.
thank you. Thank you.
No, and he feels like he's had like more than enough in a lifetime. Like he's like, I've got the
Yes.
smallpox scar to prove it. No, of course not. And I understand that. And but I do, in all seriousness, really understand. I understand the friction of we trained you to be a warrior. Your job is to go out and win the country's wars and to be the most lethal fighting force in the world. And then also, when you come home, would you please ask for help if you need help with things that you're struggling with? Like, I get it. The dichotomy does not make sense. And yet, it is the human condition to need to process traumatic experiences, to process, even if it's just the sense of loss of community and not feeling understood where you are in the progression of your life, and that veteran is a part of your identity, even if it's not in the way you introduce yourself. I certainly see that with a lot of people who have served that are, middle career, and their service is more than a decade ago, and they feel like disconnected and yet totally outraged by things that have happened in current events, or they want to have a say, or what was my sacrifice for if this is how things are going. And that's not a political statement, it's just something I've heard expressed, and it's real. And I think that people like you being open, and the platform that you have where you create a forum to have real conversations, is one of the answers. And also making sure that the mental health clinicians have the right training to provide evidence-based therapies to veterans and service members who do show up in their offices or on a telehealth, so that they can have the cultural competency and also the evidence-based training to really help, in some cases, cure acute PTSD and alleviate the angst of depression and anxiety. And it's something I'm so passionate about, and I also acknowledge we have a long way to go.
Speaking of a long way to go, I mean, the future is in various forms right now. There's all this focus on AI, all this focus on automation, in healthcare, mental health, so on and so forth. I have to wonder, though, if you have this Got Your Six consortium of service organizations that you support and you're getting data from them, Do you do anything with that data besides just looking at where the need is, or is that data really built helping you build future frameworks for more effective service delivery?
Well, you're making the pitch for Bob Woodruff Foundation 2030. So we are open source with our data. So our goal is to, like, having the largest sample set is to learn, gain, analyze, gain insights, apply it to our own work, but also to make it publicly available to the organizations who participated in the research, to policymakers at all levels, federal, state, local, and to other adjacent professionals, whether maybe you're working in mental health but not working in mental health for veterans, but there are insights that might apply to that. So the goal is to make all of us smarter. With high tides, all boats will rise kind of attitude. And this is so not a glamorous mission, and you have to stick with me to like get excited about the vision, but the Got Your Six network in totality, and we've set a goal to have by 2030 2,000 organizations that are a part of the network, so 5x where we are now, is to build the national infrastructure for veteran support services in this country. And I've played with a lot of different analogies. The one that I'm jiving with right now is, like, every state can build their highways, but at a certain point, the country needed an interstate system so that you could get from state to state in a continuous, to stay on I-95. And so the vision is that wherever you live, you can have hyper-local, hyper-relevant resources that are vetted and verified available to you without the quagmire of bad results when you sit at on your phone and type into Google, like, PTSD support near me. The answer should be something that you can go to that clinic or set up a telehealth appointment, and you know that it's been verified and vetted and all of that. So my goal is that it's easier for you or for the person who is transitioning out of the military this summer, just by the normal cadence of service, that it's really a lot easier and certainly not stress-inducing to get connected to the support that is out there. And then for those of us who are dedicated to closing the gap between what's out there and what's needed, that we can be really precise. Going back to your point about donors need to be decisive, there is enough to go around if we work smarter, not harder.
Well, speaking of smarter, I mean, I'm just thinking, okay, if you 5X and you go from 400 data points to 2,000 data points, you're going to be able to get, granular, very, very easy based on location. I mean, region, location, anything like, okay, for instance, there's a lot more veterans by just due course in Texas than there are, say, in Idaho. Okay, but hey, the Idaho veterans need these things. You're really going to be able to forecast what's needed and where, and then use that interstate road to provide the services more effectively.
Yes, I'm so glad you're with me, and I'm so excited to do it. We've been working on this for several years. We had an early believer in the vision. His name is Craig Newmark. He's the person who invented Craigslist, and he's someone I met along the path of being a part of the Bob Woodruff Foundation, and he understood almost a decade ago that it was too messy out there, and somebody needed to organize it, but it was more than a directory. And we had the vision well before we now have the AI tools to make the results faster and better. And I look at AI as applied to the Bob Woodruff Foundation as our growth engine. We have about 30 employees, and yet we're providing support in all 50 states and U.S. territories, and can pinpoint it down to the zip code, to your earlier point about granularity. And so my goal is that we can continue to scale our programs and services without having to scale the overhead and footprint of the Bob Woodruff Foundation team that's doing the work behind the scenes.
So I have to think the Woodruff family, Bob, had this idea and they started it. Now, 18, almost 20 years later, they're looking at what you're doing. They're seeing you make your reports and your 5 and 10 year plans. Do they ever come back to you and say, you know what, Anne Marie, we never thought it would be like this, but wow. Is it ever communicated that way?
Yes, I do think that in the early days, they were, it was the most traumatic thing that had ever happened in their lives. And they, like, I always come back to, they had four kids, they had 5-year-old twins. Bob was 44 years old when he was wounded. And yet, and he was at the top of the game. He had the anchor desk. And the choices that they made, even in the fog of all that trauma, to help others is just who they are. But what has come from that is the groundswell of people who have really rallied to support and rallied to support over time. And the endurance of the organization, to me, really reinforces that we are doing the right thing, because if we weren't, it wouldn't endure. We wouldn't be as strong and as focused and effective as we are. But I do, the thing that makes me the most proud and is also innately humbling is in quiet moments where I've talked to Bob, he says, this is, if this is the result of what happened, it's the best thing I could have ever done in my life. And so he looks at having, a near-death experience being the spark to what is now a movement that has helped millions of people. And he's like, if that's what it took, then it was completely worth it. And it is the thing I am most proud of in my life.
Your life, though, let's just as we close down, I want to say, you're with an organization for 18 years. You've lived the married Marine wife life. You've done that. 18 years later, almost 20, and with a 10 year plan in effect. What's the best part about coming to work every day, Anne Marie?
I know that every day I get to do something that is making a difference. I've talked to people in thousands of companies at this point, and they're working to do a job. I am leading an incredible team. We have so much support. We have the opportunity to see a problem and then just try and solve it. And we get to work with really smart, passionate people and different people and different. No 2 days has ever been the same, other than when it's hard and it's been hard, when we've hit roadblocks and we have, when the future is uncertain or think the noise of whatever else is going on in the world is loud. I know that we can put our heads down and focus on the work and know that we're helping people, and then get up the next day and do it again.
That's a legacy then. That's not just, punching the time clock and going home or collecting the 2 week salary check. That's a legacy that you're helping leave behind for, the Woodruff and the Woodruff family and the people you serve. It's an amazing organization. I went on and learned about what it did, and I'm like, this is different but very, very needed. How can people connect with your organization, help out, or get involved if need be?
Well, certainly the website's a great way. And I say that, we're open for business. We are, as I described earlier, a grant maker. So if you are running a nonprofit that supports veterans and military families, please check out that part of our website because we are open for business. We will be spending over $15 million this year on grants to incredible organizations that are the boots on the ground doing the work. I also encourage you, if you are a veteran-serving nonprofit, to join the Got Your Six Network. That information is also on the website. And then if you are someone who is inspired and said, I want to help veterans and I didn't know how, and I would love to support the Bob Woodruff Foundation, we certainly are. All of our work is through the support of individuals and corporate supporters. So we are not funded by the government. It is truly the support of the public. We're a public foundation. So I always say in the simplest way, like what we raise this year is what we're going to spend next year. So the more we raise, the more we can do. And I certainly welcome any conversations or partnerships around that. And then if you want to connect with me directly, I'm very active on LinkedIn and Instagram at AMM Doherty. And the reason I say that is because that's where I've had some of the most heartwarming and heartbreaking interactions with people who are really like out there in the grind, living the lifestyle. And it's an opportunity and sort of a portal for me to stay connected to the mission while I'm, not the spouse of an active duty Marine anymore. It is really important to me to not lose touch of the everyday realities. So I welcome those connections. And then on LinkedIn, the same, if I can help open any doors or make introductions or forge a new partnership, like a lot of good stuff has come from LinkedIn, so I'm here for it.
So, last question. I have to think you've served in this capacity at a high level with extremely high standards for a long time. You have to be able to do something and talk about nonprofit, stewardship, board governance, things like that as well, right?
Yes. I mean, my team laughs because I'm like, oh, strategic planning time. I love a strategic plan. I love a board, a business plan. I love board meetings. I love governance. I love committees. I love all of it. I'm kind of obsessed with the plumbing of a good foundation or
Right.
nonprofit. So, you could get me started and we could talk about that all day.
Well, maybe you'll come back and talk to me about that.
I would love to. I've just am truly delighted by you, and it's like really humbling to answer all these questions about myself, but I'm happy to do it if it helps even one person.
Well, I think it's important that you hear the title CEO and people have a certain, thought about what a CEO is, a soulless entity that's just, guiding money, firing people, and laying people off. And what I find a lot of times is there's a deeper reason for a lot of these choices that CEOs make and have to make based on what they do. And if you don't understand the person, you're not going to understand the organization and what they're trying to do. So that's kind of my approach. But I want to thank you for sharing so openly with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, there you have it, folks. Again, one of the themes for OMR this year was the fact that a lot of civilians who've never served, wouldn't know an Alice pack from a Molly pack, still pick up their pack and put it on to serve us, and we can learn so much from them. Anne Marie, I want to thank you for coming on Oscar Mike Radio and sharing so openly about the Bob Woodruff Foundation. And it'd be really cool to meet Mr. Woodruff someday. We'll see what happens. But again, thank you. And as we say in Oscar Mike Radio, Anne Marie, we are mission in flight.
Thank you so much.
Every generation, every sacrifice, our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath, it's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Co-Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.